dealerships have big budgets for big advertising, but the truth is that major sponsorships cost big bucks. Here at Prime Rate Motors, we choose to serve our local youth and local worthwhile programs, all the while passing that savings on to you, our customer. We are locally owned with the same ownership and management for over 40 years. If we don't have what you need, we'll find it and we'll stand behind it after the sale because we live here, we work here, and we raise our families here. Prime Rate Motors, 2305 Coffeen Avenue.
Hi, this is Taylor, front of house manager at Frackleton's. When you walk through our doors, you feel it, the perfect mix of style, warmth, and confidence. And that's no accident. It's our team, polished, friendly, and ready to make your night special. From the greetings to the goodbye, we care about your experience as much as your meal. Sheridan's favorite place to connect, celebrate, and unwind. Frackleton's, where great food meets flawless service. Main Street in downtown Sheridan.
This is Public Pulse, your information and conversation program, brought to you by First Federal Bank and Trust. You can voice your opinion by calling 672-KROE. That's 672-5763. Now, your host for Public Pulse, Floyd Whitey.
Monday, December 29th, from the foot of the Bighorns in Wyoming's Emerald City, I'm Floyd Whiting, and this is Public Pulse. This morning, we're joined by Board President of the Sheridan Community Foundation, Mark Kinner, and Vice President, Jay McGinnis. Good morning, and welcome morning. To the show.
Good morning. Good morning.
How was your Christmas?
Awesome.
That's great to hear.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was just wonderful. This nice weather, Floyd.
Yeah.
even with the little bit of snow we have on the ground now, it was just a perfect holiday.
You know, I felt the same way. My wife's one of those individuals. Boy, she loves the snow. She absolutely loves it. So she's kind of down this year. But I'll tell you what, when you got to make that drive from Buffalo to Sheridan every day, you appreciate the clear weather.
The nice roads.
It's pretty dang nice. Now, let's jump into the Sheridan Community Foundation. How long has this foundation been operating, Mr. Kinner?
Floyd, you know, it's an interesting thing. And I'm going to step back a ways, if I might. And kind of explain to folks how the concept came about and how the idea of the foundation came up. So I don't know, 15 years ago plus, Jay and I served on the Homer and Mildred Scott Foundation board. And occasionally we'd look at each other and say, I'd say, Jay, are you going to have a foundation with your name on it? And he'd say no, and then some time would go by and he goes, hey, are you going to have a foundation with your name on it? And say no. And say, well, you know, what is there out there for those of us that might not have that opportunity? And so visiting about it over the years, and then a couple of years ago, 3 years ago, I guess, we asked each other the same question. And we said, well, if we want to do something about it, we better get going. Because we've been talking about it for so many years, about the possibility of having a community foundation. And that idea comes about. We know that there's a great one, a large one in Jackson. There's also one in Lander. And we thought, you know, we think that idea is just really helpful for Sheridan. So we explored the idea and we started visiting with as many people as we could find and had really positive response. And we visited with one person who does have a foundation, and I'll mention his name. I don't think he would be happy to have his name mentioned, Don Roberts, and who's done a lot of things for the land trust, the community land trust, and so on. And he said, you know, he said, I really have felt Sheridan needed a community foundation for many, many years. And he said, I wasn't sure how it was going to come about, but he said, maybe you guys are just the two to kind of get things started. And we visited with some other like-minded people, and they said, yeah, we've been thinking about the same thing. And so we thought, well, okay, how do we get started then? How do we go about it, right? Because you're starting from ground zero. So we visited and put together kind of a pool of like-minded people and ultimately formed a board and you know, sort of went through all the things that you do to try to get a a nonprofit going, and we applied for a 501c3, and we're very happy to receive the approval in a short amount of time. And we do have the 501c3 designation, but also we're further designated as a public charity instead of a private foundation, which gives us some advantages because we can donate to issues and to projects that don't have a 501c3 if it's for community benefit. And so it gives us kind of an advantage. So that gives you a little bit of the background, I think. Jay, would you add anything to that? Or
it's been only a couple of years, though, that we've been active. In this last year, boy, this is where we've really wanted to step into the public arena and be, you know, just more known and more visible and a chance to tell our story more. But Mark's right. It's the idea has been baking for quite some time, and it's great to pull it out of the oven and find, discover that it cooked up pretty nicely. This last year has been so good to us.
Now, every foundation has an official mission. What is the official mission of the Sheridan Community Foundation?
So I could paraphrase it, but let me read it to you. It's to support and strengthen the Sheridan community. Okay. Support and strengthen the Sheridan community through charitable giving and philanthropic education. So we want to support all of the efforts that are going on out there, especially all of the great foundations that already exist in our community. You know, look at the fine work that they're all doing. And there are so many good ones. And I kind of call it the Big Five, but we have, you know, the Hospital Foundation, the College Foundation, the Hub, Volunteers of America, and the YMCA, all really good foundations. We want to encourage folks to support them also.
Yeah.
So this is not an effort to compete with those. We want to work with them when we can, and hopefully the funds that we're able to raise will put to good use and work with them, and also work with the good work that the nonprofits are doing in our community as well.
Now, after the two of you sat down, decided, you know what, let's form a board, you found your folks, what's the first step? How do you go from a dream of wanting a foundation to actually becoming one? What was that first step after you found your people?
Well, you have a little bit of a reality check there, because because a good idea doesn't always float. And it was fun because the board was certainly enthusiastic about it and committed to being a working board. We don't have any staff, no paid staff. We do have to pay for some legal services and accounting services. So I think the real test for us, we needed some dollars in the bank. So we visited with some folks and got some seed money, some gifting for administrative purposes. We're just really a couple years into this entire effort. And I think our bank balance right now would be a little over $3 million, right at or a little over $3 million. So we're really pleased, and we think that's the test, is and the board's been very generous in their giving, and we've just found that individuals and other organizations have just supported us really well. The whole effort, though, is to turn around and support nonprofits to help build sustainable funding for the nonprofit community and to make grants to the nonprofit community. But the response has just been really good. So that was the test, is can we really raise any money and can we get people excited about the idea of building nonprofits in a way that can sustain them, give them some additional resources along the way.
Is that really what makes the Sheridan Community Foundation different from other foundations? You have the ability to support almost anyone. that you and the board make the decision to do so.
Well, I think that's common to a lot of community foundations. I think we have a laser focus on nonprofits. We want to build funds for them, and we certainly want to make grants. So I think minimizing any overhead for us just means dollars pass straight through to the nonprofits, that we're focusing any dollars that we raise or any interest earned from the money we have in the bank. It's going to support the nonprofits. And it's wonderful. At some point in time, we're going to get big enough. We're going to need more staff support. But for right now, it's neat to see us operate with everything being, you know, kind of dedicated back to the nonprofit community.
And that's something that I think really makes you specific. You can look at other nonprofits, as many as you'd like. Say, like the Hospital Foundation, they support the hospital. Whereas you can support multiple organizations. Mr. Kinnear, when you were sitting in your representative seat, did you see a gap that you wanted to fill? Was that kind of what helped spur this, where you thought, you know, when it comes to funding nonprofits, this is one of the things I'm going to have to do myself?
You know, maybe not in that exact way, Floyd, but in a roundabout way, I think yes. And through conversations with Jay and just others over the years, you know, what does Sheridan, what does the community need? What could really help them, help us down the road? And one of the things that I think will be a strength of ours over time, and as Jay mentioned, this is really our first effort to go out and visit with the public.
Yeah.
And so, but over time, we would like to think that every person in Sheridan could help and could participate in the Community Foundation, whether it's a dollar or $5 or $100 or maybe a little bit more, or maybe sometime perhaps part of an estate or something, to leave a legacy, to leave a gift back to the community. And I think that's one thing that resonates with us and others that we've spoken to, is that, you know, Sheridan has really been very good to us. And how do we say thank you, and how do we pass that on to those who come after us? And we think this is really a good way to do that.
Now, when it comes to balancing support, immediate community needs and long-term goals, as you said, legacy, you want to leave something behind. How do you really balance that, where you say, you know what, the community need right now, as opposed to 10, 15, 20 years down the line? Do you sit and look at that?
I think it's an interesting process, Floyd, because my experience is the donor's always king, the person that's providing a dollar, and they help guide that discussion. Obviously, you know, a year or a little bit more than that when we had all the fires in Sheridan County. That's something that someone's going to look at and say, that's an immediate need. How can an organization or an individual or existing funders help with that? Someone else might look at the needs of veterans or seniors or young people and say, I'd really like to support their efforts in a way that's more long-term. So I'd like to open a fund with those focuses in mind. One of the things that motivates us, I think, is to realize how many people hold Sheridan as just an exceptional community and have lived here for a long time. Mark and I would be two examples of that. I really have what I have in my life because I've worked and lived in Sheridan. It's just a wonderful, exceptional place. So how can I give something back? I may think a little more long-term with that and hope to add to our community fund in some way that allows more granting and the grants be greater than they were a year. Every year, I think a measure for us is, are we making grants, and are the grants, do they have a little more impact, a little more size? So, but the donor drives a lot of giving. Mm-hmm. When needs come up in the community, we hope we hear from donors. We hope we're providing a pathway, though, for not necessarily high net worth individuals, but just common everyday citizens. And Mark referred to it. We hope we're offering a pathway where they can support the community in a broad fashion. So it's that combined giving when all of us pool our ability to give, and then that pooling is focused on critical community needs or critical community nonprofits or the idea of sustaining nonprofits with permanent endowment funds. It's just a positive thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I got to take a quick commercial break, but before I do that, I got one more question for you in this segment, and that is, with all this, the community foundations, as you said, the, you know, kind of the big five, how do you see your role alongside them rather than competing? 'Cause the donor is king, but at the same time, the donor does have a limit that they can spend. How do you, I guess, ask for funds from the donors without dipping into another pocket?
Well, we want to find out what the donor's interests are. Certainly, if the donor's interest is in supporting one of those foundations that we mentioned, we encourage that and want them to do that to any extent that they can. but we offer then something else. If they're not really sure and they don't have that laser focus, then we provide another opportunity that's maybe a little bit broader, as you suggested a little bit earlier, and a little bit wider. But again, we want to encourage folks with our mission, philanthropic education. We want to encourage philanthropy. And so really, at the end of the day, maybe this is an overused term, but we'd like to see everyone's boat float a little bit higher in the water.
Yeah.
And so that would be a goal for us to try to accomplish that. And we do have some crossovers with some of our board members that are with some of those organizations that have those other foundations. So we're I think, set so that we don't cross the line and go to that competition, because we really don't want to compete with them. We want to try to work with them. And then the other foundations, some of the private foundations that do such good works. I mentioned the Homer and Mildred Scott Foundation, you know, all the good work that they're doing. And then there's many, many others. And I guess I don't want to start to go down the list, because I'll probably miss some really good ones. But at the end of the day, we would like to get to the size where we can work with them.
Collaborate
with them. Yeah, thank you for that word. On various projects and that come up. And so we think that's really exciting to work with them. And so that wouldn't be in a competitive thing, but we'd be working on the same projects.
I think that would be absolutely amazing.
And Floyd, I just think it's interesting. Philanthropy doesn't have a ceiling, and it's not a certain size apple pie that you only get a certain size piece from. It is capable of growing and having greater dimensions and scope and height. And I think we've discovered in the Sheridan Community Foundation the capacity to grow philanthropy. So individuals that make a gift or two and they see the impact of those gifts are more likely to give more. And I just think that's what we're going to see in the community, and it's going to be a benefit to, as Mark says, all the boats would rise. But I think the pie, the philanthropic pie in Sheridan, is simply going to get bigger.
It's not the pie, it's the tree, right?
Well, yes, the pine
tree. Apple. Yeah, right.
The apple tree. All right. We're going to have more with the president and vice president of the Sheridan Community Foundation right after this. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE at 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
Once again, the Wyo Theater brings you a month of classic Western matinees each Sunday in January at 2 p.m. We open January 4th with Buck Brenneman introducing Along Came Jones, with Gary Cooper as a slow-moving cowboy mistaken for an outlaw stumbling through danger and small-town antics. Then Craig Johnson introduces Destry Rides Again, with Jimmy Stewart as a lawman who won't carry a gun, but still cleans up a corrupt town with sharp humor Western style. Then Bob Grammons presents There Was a Crooked Man, starring a diabolical Kirk Douglas, charming an entire prison, while Henry Fonda, the clueless warden, struggles to reform him. Finally, Tommy B introduces Cowboy, with Glenn Ford as the no-nonsense trail boss, and Jack Lemmon as the city slicker taking his lumps on the trail. Classic Western matinees every Sunday in January at 2 p.m. at the Wyo Theater.
This announcement brought to you by Farmers Co-op Country Store on Coffeen Avenue, home of the Ligursky Sausage Lunch.
Sheridan County, this moment is brought to you by you. Thanks to the generosity of our community donors, the SCLT Big Goose Natural Area at Bridges is now open for families, for anglers, for hikers, for everyone who loves the land. Experience it today at 14 Lane Lane. Plan your visit at SheridanCLT.org.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. I'm your host, Floyd Whiting, and this morning we're sitting with Sheridan Community Foundation Board President Mark Kinner and Vice President Jay McInnes. Now, you recently had a dinner in October. How did that go, and what was that about?
Well, yeah, thank you for mentioning that. And, you know, we really, as part of a public awareness, we wanted to have a function where we could invite other people to come and learn about the foundation. And so we came up with the idea of having a fundraising dinner, and we invited the governor to come, and Mark Gordon came and was certainly supportive of our efforts and complimentary of our efforts. But we invited any number of community folks to come with us and have the dinner and learn about our work, and then offer them an opportunity to take part and make a donation as well. And I think, Jay, we ended up with about 150 people, I guess, at the
right at 150, yes. And we conducted the dinner at Emit. They have a lobby out there, big glass walls on one side, and kind of a semi-circular lobby. We didn't want a great big crowd, so we didn't want to go to a venue that would hold 400. We wanted to tell the story. So it was a wonderful group of about 150 people. The governor did a great job. He's certainly familiar with Sheridan, and he's a philanthropist as well. And the result of the dinner has kind of launched our efforts, and it's been real positive at the dinner. We could interpret our mission a little further than just our mission statement, in the sense that the dinner was called Own the Dream. And for us, I think the dream is just to continue to make Sheridan a great place to live and to work and to play and to raise a family. And people invested in it. I won't remember the exact dollar total that we raised the dinner, and after the dinner, we continued to get gifts. But it was about 300 plus thousand.
Wow.
So it was a wow. We turned around in December and also made some grants as a result of the efforts at the dinner. But the dinner just gave us a great platform to tell our story.
to really open it up, I would say, as you said, you know, kind of very fledgling. Haven't done a whole lot of outreach, more building stage, yes. I guess you could say. And so finally being able to come forward and say, hey, this is what we've done. This is what we're looking forward to. We would love you to join us. How did that make you feel, Jay, to be able to finally say that?
Oh, it was remarkable. In the months leading up to that, we invited some Sheridan nonprofits to open accounts with us. And in some cases, we helped identify some donors that would do that. So it was wonderful. It was organizations like the Hub, Habitat, the Y, the Scholarship Fund in Dayton and Ranchester, the Pathway Fund in Dayton and Ranchester. Recently, the Children's Center opened a fund. And individuals that attended the dinner, again, the donor's king, but they had the opportunity to say, I'd really like, if they made a $1,000 gift, I'd like half of it to go to the Hub and half of it to go to a scholarship fund. I mean, it was nice to see the enthusiasm that the individuals were at the dinner had for giving to all these different causes. We had one really unique fund that was opened by a donor out of Montana. It's the Yellowtail Fund. It's a Native American fund, but the purpose is to help connect the tribes north of us, Crow and Cheyenne, with the Sheridan community and to find opportunities to kind of share a common message and voice between those two cultures. I'm just really excited about that.
I think that'd be fantastic.
It was. And that particular fund received great support at the dinner. We had a couple donors that also offered us the opportunity to do some matching fund with those organizations I mentioned. So kind of a dollar for dollar, a $5,000 grant. If they match that, it goes into their fund. So it grows their operational support. All positive.
And I love the matching funds. I know not every you know, fundraiser has those, but boy, you really feel like you're making a bigger impact by contributing to that.
It just gets you excited. It just gets you excited. But it gets the nonprofit excited too. I mean, here comes more dollars down the pipeline. That's just a great thing.
Now, can you walk us through the grant making process, how it works from application to award? Maybe there are some 501c3s sitting out there going, you know what? Holy cow. I may be missing an opportunity here, and I need to get involved.
I'd be happy to do that,
yeah,
Mark,
go ahead,
real quickly. We've only granted for 2 years, last year and this year, because last year would have been the first year that we had some dollars in the bank that earned some interest. So we gave 18 $500 scholarships last year. In the process we used, we certainly would invite nonprofits to write a short letter to us. We don't want to burden the nonprofits with having to take a lot of time for a long application and then get a $500 grant. But that's the amount of money that we had to give away last year. And we just put a community group together that discussed what organizations, nonprofits, could we give a grant to that would make a difference at that level, at the $500 level. And I think they did a wonderful job of identifying 18 of them that they gave a grant to. We followed a similar process this year, but we had a lot more funds to give away this year. And again, I won't remember the exact number, but I think it was 100,000 plus, maybe closer to like 130,000, 140,000 altogether in the second year.
157.
So it's really a neat.
That's incredible.
I mean, from 18,000 the first year to 157 the second year. And some of those were donors that funds that were directed by a donor. Some was from our community, community fund and pot, and some, quite a few of those funds, was from the dinner that individuals that came to our Own the Dream dinner gave us the opportunity to create grants. So it was all really positive stuff. Any nonprofit that would want to be considered will probably continue to grant in November or December every year. And if there was particular community needs, you know, like the fires and some other things that just require immediate response, we'd be making some grants. But every year in November or December, we're going to send out some grants. So nonprofits out there, like I say, would be welcome to just send us a letter sharing their interest and support, and we would be taking a look at that.
It'd be fantastic. As I was telling you during the break, I speak to a lot of nonprofits, and some funding revenues have just kind of shut down, dried up, or been cut off. And, you know, some of them have got some worried looks on their faces when they come in and here to talk to me. And they're very candid and open about, you know, the situation that's being presented. And so I think having foundations, especially one like this, where there's not that many caveats or things that I have to go around to get to the funds to help people in the community today. And I really do appreciate that. Now, how do you evaluate the impact of the funds that have gone to these organizations? Doing your due diligence, I guess, would be, you know, kind of a follow-up or a conversation even.
Well, it's nice shared. It's not a real big community. So the nonprofits are not a mystery to us. So I think and they're very transparent organizations. You get to meet and talk to their staff. You get to quiz them about their mission and the impact of their work. You get to see their volunteer board leadership. They have a history. There are some new nonprofits. But I also think in charitable work, you have to take a chance or two, Floyd. You maybe... I'm sure people wondered when, and this is just an example because I was involved with the food group a little bit when it got started. There were people that wondered, do kids really need food? Is that really where we should be spending our money? Isn't there school lunch and everything else that takes care of these kids? But when you drilled down into it, you realized the weekends aren't always a time in which kids get food. And there are issues with food insecurity. The pandemic even emphasized that much more. So, you know, I think we can visibly see in our community where there's needs and where there's high performing nonprofits.
You know, Floyd, I'd like to just share a really neat story about one of the grants that we made last year. And it went to the Claremont Historical group. I'm not sure of
a center. I think they call themselves a center.
Okay. And they have a little museum in Claremont. And this year we also gave them a grant. And part of the reason that we did was we heard that the grant from last year was put to such good use. And so one of the ladies that represented them this year came up and she said, "Mark, I was so excited. Do you want to know what we did with the funds?" And I said, "I'd love to hear. We love the stories that come back, and many of them send thank you notes to us with the reports of how they spent the money." Well, these folks in Claremont, in their museum, they had a dirt floor in their basement, and they used some of our funds to pour concrete in the basement and cover up a dirt floor in their basement, and then at the same time, the money also gave them funds to buy shelves to store some of their things instead of just setting boxes and things maybe on a dirt floor or whatever, you know, organize it and put it on shelves. And so, you know, that really was a good feeling to hear that, you know, that's bare bones stuff, right?
Right.
But look at the impact of that our small grant made to them. And it was just really heartwarming, I guess, for us, and also encouraging for us to also seek out other smaller nonprofits that really could use some help. And I think we were successful this year. And Jay alluded to it that when we do the grant making process, we do ask for a few community members to sit with us and bring their ideas and thoughts. And so to us, that involves the community even more by having them coming. And then it's not so, it's just us trying to decide what is good. We listen to others, you know, about where we could have an impact, even with small amounts.
Now, I got to take a commercial break. But before I do, off of what you just stated, how do you choose the individuals who are going to come in and sit with you and make these decisions?
The folks who have, I think, expressed an interest in what we're doing, and then, you know, offered to help in some way. I think that's one of the reasons. And then folks that are really in tune with what's going on in the community, knowledgeable of things out there, that may have, you know, eyes that go a little wider and farther, you know, with the binoculars than maybe we do. And so we're always constantly, I think, looking for those folks that might be able to help us in that regard. Volunteers.
Yeah.
You know, that would.
Those individuals in the community that are already making an impact.
Oh, yeah. Well, these are.
Right.
The entire group are people that give and they volunteer. And in any community event, you see most or all of them at those events. They're plugged in.
Hey, people know the helpers.
They do, yeah. And they're heartfelt. Their heart is in everything they do. So for us to sit around and brainstorm, and I think we did 29 grants altogether this year. So 18 the first year and 29, something like that, the second year. It's just good to see that kind of breadth and depth and growth. But the folks helping us with the grant selection, they're just into it all the way around. The first year, we had enough money for 14 grants, and we gave 18. And the four that we thought we were going to have to eliminate off the list, the people around the table said, I'll make up that difference.
Wow.
So we knew we had the right people. Yeah. And then we added to that list this year.
That's fantastic. On that, I do have to take another quick commercial break. More with our Sheridan Community Foundation when we return. You're listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE and 103.9 FM. Sheridan.
Wonder where your bank's priorities really are?
At First Federal Bank and Trust, they're right here at home.
No shareholders, just shared values.
Local decision-making, community support, and a long-standing commitment to the people we serve.
Plus the convenience of online and mobile banking.
Banking that matches your values.
First Federal Bank and Trust. More than a bank, a mutual bank. Member FDIC.
Mandy Kolziska from Century 21 BHJ Realty brings you this Pet of the Week from the Dog and Cat Shelter. 5-year-old Thor has good manners, and he's very nice, polite, and cooperative. Bonding through obedience class and going for walks would be a wonderful way to bond. If you need a devoted partner, this dog is the one for you. 6-year-old Fanny Bear is a large cat with a large heart. She's curious and wants to be the only furball by your side. If she sounds like the perfect kitty for you, you'll find her at the Dog and Cat Shelter.
Say hello to the future of choosing your dream kitchen or bath. Buffalo Stone and Tile now house Wyoming's first 100% self-serve showroom, open every day 7:30 to 7. Granite, quartz, porcelain tile, luxury vinyl plank, faucets, hardware, thousands of today's hottest finishes, all ready for you to explore on your schedule. Just stop by, call the number on the door, and get buzzed in. No appointments, no pressure. Buffalo Stone and Tile, 1402 Sugarland Drive, behind WyoVision. Self-serve, stress-free, seriously gorgeous. Design help available by appointment.
Doug, what truck survives Wyoming winters?
The Silverado, Bob. We have all the new ones. 1500, 2500, and 3500 HD. Pick the muscle you need.
Snow, mud, mountains, the Silverado just shrugs and says not a problem, huh?
Strong engines, smart tech, comfort, built to work.
And built to make me look good?
Let's not promise the impossible, Bob.
Hey, folks, come on down and find your 2026 Silverado today.
Waring Chevrolet, 107 East Alger, or go online at waringsheridan.com.
Welcome in 2026 with a bang with Whizbang Fireworks. Whizbang is a great selection of fireworks in all varieties. You can start the new year off with a fireworks celebration. Whizbang Fireworks will be open Saturday, December 27th, through Wednesday, December 31st, from noon to 4 p.m. on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut. Use caution with fireworks and follow local laws. Celebrate 2026 with fireworks from Whiz Bang Fireworks, open on North Main Street behind Pizza Hut.
Mule deer are on their way to winter ranges and could be on some highways too. Pay close attention for deer when driving, especially in early morning and evening hours. If there's one deer on a highway, there's probably another nearby. Pay attention to those deer warning signs. They're there for a reason. Reducing vehicle speed is your best bet. Collision repair costs are an incentive too. Wildlife vehicle collisions can cause a lot of damage, and slowing down can save both you and the wildlife. Sponsored by the Wyoming Game and Fish, the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, and this station.
Good morning and welcome back to Public Pulse. Proudly brought to you by our friends out there at First Federal Bank and Trust. I'm Floyd Whiting. This morning, I am speaking with Sheridan Community Foundation Board President Mark Kinner and Vice President Jay McGinnis. Now, recently, the Sheridan Community Foundation issued grants totaling more than $157,000 to 28 Sheridan County nonprofit organizations. During the break, we were talking about major impacts made by individuals already. How do you raise funds generally to support this foundation's work?
Well, it's really getting the word out and sharing with people the opportunities that we have. And when you see those different organizations, from the Story Library to the Ranchester Library, for example, doing great work in those little tiny communities, but sometimes forgotten. And so we were very happy to support them also, in addition to the story that I just told you about the Claremont Historical Group. But there's others out there. And as we can tell these stories, Floyd, we're hopeful that other people will see that and think, you know, I would like to help out too. And so you're helping us today get the word out and spread the word, about the work that we're doing. And hopefully there'll be people that want to also be a part of that. Jay mentioned earlier that as we grow our community pot, so to speak, we have an endowment set up for the community. All those dollars go back to the community, and that's how we fund this. But the first couple of years, that amount was smaller, and so we weren't able to give out a whole lot of dollars from that, but from other sources. But as that grows, we're very hopeful that over time, that will really generate some sizable dollars as folks want to leave a legacy. For our community. One thing that I think is kind of neat, and I'll mention this, Jay, I think we have about 10 or is it 10 or 11 permanent endowments set up now for nonprofits in the area where they've had some money sitting around, kicking around in a coffee can or whatever, and they said, you know, we want to put that to work. So we are investing that for them.
Oh, wow.
With the rest of our dollars. And hopefully providing them a little larger return than keeping it in the coffee can. And I think those 10 nonprofits that we have established the endowments for, I believe, and was it about a year ago that we started those?
Yeah, just maybe May or June.
Maybe not even a year. But Floyd, we're really thankful to say that... There's with their help and with our help, there's $1 million in those 10 nonprofits, and not equally distributed, but that shows you that the need was out there, yeah. and so hopefully we would continue to have those things grow, and certainly one of them a scholarship fund in the Tongue River Dayton area, and wow, what a great thing there, and to see that grow. It's just very rewarding to us. And then we think about those future students and so on. And so we think about the impacts of not only people here today, but the impacts that the foundation can have, the community foundation can have, for all those that come after us down the road as it continues to grow and long after Jay and I are doing what we can to help it out. But that's what really gets us excited.
And it warms the heart. I mean, when it comes to scholarships and things like that, you're changing a life.
Oh, it's a big deal.
And that life can go on to change how many others?
Yep. Yeah, there's a major ripple out of that. And I think one of the questions that we get asked sometimes is how are you different than if the organization just takes a few extra dollars and puts it in the bank and hopes that it grows? We hope that we're different because we can help tell their story. We hope we can also convene funders. It's like own the dream dinner. We can convene people that are looking for a place to invest in the community and may not just be aware of the Claremont Arvada Historical Society or the needs that Big Brothers and Big Sisters have or the impact that a gift to the hub would make. We also manage these dollars very inexpensively. Our fees, the community fund, which would have an investment fee and a management fee, the board pays that fee. We've made the commitment for as long as we can, the fees on that community pot, the board picks up. So it just means the opportunity to make grants out of that pot is more because we don't have anything taxing on it. We also work with a wonderful investment group, the Frontier Asset Management in Elevate, and they've given us just wonderful investment fees. So it means we can distribute out of all the funds, we distribute 5% back to the nonprofits. It's just a really positive impact, and more dollars are being turned over and invested and generated through that process of convening funders and in community awareness and promoting philanthropy. It's just a really positive thing.
Before I get too far, I saw something within a few stories and some of my research that I didn't know exactly what it was. And I'm sure in the nonprofit world and the foundation world, it's a common phrase, but it's one that I haven't seen. What is an agency partner account?
Agency account, either one of us could answer that. But if the hub comes to us and they want to open an account, it's really the agency, the nonprofit. It's a nonprofit account. We call it an agency account. It just separates it from the community account. So we have like 9 agency accounts, and we also have our community fund account. So it's just identifying a nonprofit, and their dollars that are in that agency account is dedicated to that nonprofit.
Okay, so this is exactly what you were talking about, Mr. King,
right,
where you said, you know what, we're going to invest this for you, and hopefully you can live off the interest.
Exactly, and all of the funds that are raised by their permanent endowments go right back to them. Once a year, we make the distributions on the income, and hopefully that helps them with their operating funds, which is a challenge, as you mentioned earlier, for many nonprofits.
Now, you know, for the average Joe, we may want to make some sort of contribution, but we may feel, gosh, you know, I'm not one of these people that has $10,000 to give. I would love to be able to make any kind of contribution. Can you remember a specific time, and I only have a couple minutes left, but a specific time where you saw a small contribution come from someone that really, really touched your heart? Because you know, the people that in my experience, some of the people who have very little are the ones who want to give the most.
That's a really good question. The Hub opened a fund this year, and a donor did it for them and did it with a $10,000 gift. And so it started kind of modestly, and the Hub needs all the money they can to sustain the services that they have. Based on what you mentioned earlier, it's just that funding streams are harder. That fund now, I think, is in about a $35,000 amount.
Wow.
But some small gifts came into that. And it also received some, you know, some moderate-sized gifts too. But that combined giving, $100, $500, $1,000, has really created a fund there for the hub, an initial fund that I think we're going to see continue to grow. But there was some small gifts in that.
You know, I can't see Cheyenne from Sheridan, but I can see 100 meters in front of me. And if I cover that 100 meters a little bit at a time, I will eventually get to where I'm going. And that is how I've always kind of looked at things like this. I can't see it from here, but if I make those small strides, we will get there.
Yeah.
Now, before we go, what message would you like to leave with the community about the role of giving for Sheridan's future?
Well, I think, Floyd, if we look at our community today and down the road, there are many needs, and we recognize that, and we would encourage folks to get involved in any way they can, and they can certainly contact us by going to our website, Sheridan Community Foundation. They could also, maybe I'll just give them my email address. So mine is mark@givesheridan.org, G-I-V-E, Sheridan.org. And they could get a hold of us and contact us about donations. Also, Floyd, because we're just trying to get the word out there, if there's any organizations or nonprofits that would like to have us come and speak to their boards, we'd be more than happy to do that. So any opportunity that we can to tell our story, to encourage philanthropy, encourage giving, that's kind of the mode that we're in right now. We feel like we've built a good base, a good foundation to get started from. And so, Jay, what else would you say to...
Giving in Sheridan is just part of our culture, I think. It's something really special about this little community, and you see it every place. You see it certainly at the college and the hub and the Y and the hospital and all the other nonprofits. It's the engine that has made Sheridan really something special. So my message to the greater community is continue to invest in those charities that are important mm-hmm. to you. And in organizations that you think are making a difference. And we're going to continue to try to grow our community fund so that we can make more grants. If there's any place that we need contributions to, big and small, is to grow that community pot so that every year when we meet and distribute a few grants, we can do a little bit more every year. But for everyone to embrace that idea of giving is in volunteering. And convening around important community issues, it's just a must.
Large and small sizes, one and all, I would love to think at the end of the day, all the listeners out there and everyone else could feel like this is their foundation, this is theirs, part of theirs, and any contribution of any size would help ensure that.
100 meters at a time, gentlemen. Yeah. Happy New Year, gentlemen. Happy New Year, Floyd. Greatly appreciate you coming in.
Thanks, Floyd. Thank you. Yeah.
All right. You've been listening to Public Pulse on 930 KROE, 103.9 FM, Sheridan.
What if your bank actually shared your values?
That's the difference at First Federal Bank and Trust.
No outside shareholders, just shared values.
Just people banking with people and investing right back into our community.
Supporting local nonprofits.
Strengthening the place where we call home.
With local branches and convenient online and mobile banking.
Banking without shareholders.
You belong at First Federal Bank and Trust. Member FDIC.
I'm Leslie Segretti, and this is News Talk 930 KROE.